Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. I am here with Nikki Buchanan, General Manager of the Population Health Insights and Care business at Philips. Hi, Nikki, and welcome to Harlow on Healthcare.
Hi, good afternoon. Isn't it wonderful to be near the end of this really exciting conference this week? As you mentioned, I am the General Manager of Population Insights and Care. And what that means in the Philips world is we bring together analytics, patient segmentation, and stratification to help find the right programs to care for patients outside of the hospital. So our whole goal is to extend the care teams with our partners to be able to care for patients in the most natural home setting environment.
Well, it's a laudable goal, of course, to keep people out of hospitals. Nobody wants to be in a hospital. And of course, there are also sick people in hospitals, and we pick up infections in hospitals. But the concern for many people is getting the right level of care. And I guess the natural question is, how can we ensure that people have access to the right level of care when we're keeping them out of the institution that in some cases they want to go to? I mean, I live in the Boston area. And everybody wants to go to Mass General because it's the best hospital in the world, or so they say. And obviously, that's not everybody is a candidate for that level of care. So what are you doing? What are you teasing out? What's the process here?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's fair. And what you're talking about is really having the access to best care. And depending on where you live, if it's a rural setting, you know, you may not have Mass General just down the street in order to access and have that high-quality service. So we work with our partners, our health system partners, to determine the right kinds of telehealth or RPM-type programs that meet the patient where their need is. So often, our customers want to focus on the really, really high acuity, which are the high-cost patients in the health system, the repeat customers, the repeat patients that are constantly going to need monitoring, surveillance, and care, and to look for alternative ways for caring for them other than the institution itself. Conditions like CHF, heart failure, is a great candidate for telehealth visits because you can start to work with the patients post-discharge, post an event in the hospital, enroll them in a 30, 45, 60, or 90-day program that's actually monitoring their behaviors, their vitals, key things that indicate whether or not they're going to return to the hospital after an event, and keep them away from the hospital but intervene with care management services, whether it be a phone call or a meeting with a care manager on the phone, or if you start to see that their conditions go out of the normal range, as it should, whether it be weight or blood pressure, we can actually deploy care management services to the home to have them intervene earlier and in different ways. Sometimes these patients just simply need a different change in their medicine. The dosage, simple as the dosage, they may be feeling dizzy from the interaction of other medications that they're taking, or they may just simply not feel 100% and want to talk to a care manager and be assured that they don't need to go back to the ED to continue that care. So, you know, that's just one example of the type of programs that are being deployed out there using remote patient monitoring services and caring for folks out of the hospital. But there's simple things. There's PCP-type televisits after you've had some kind of 10 to 14-day medication for something as simple as strep throat, right? Just to make sure that everything's going well. If you think about people who are sick, who are missing work, the last thing they want to do after they've gotten better is actually take off work again and go back in to meet their PCP. So why not have an opportunity to connect with them in a different way, a digital way? We live in, are growing up in a generation of FaceTime users, Skype users, right? They want to have that interaction and that video talk, even sometimes if it's just short 2 minutes. But you can cover a lot of ground by doing these types of remote patient monitoring visits as long as they follow, and this was key to your question, clinical protocols, right? Measurements, and have valid workflows that connect the patient, what's actually happening with the patient, back to the caregiver, whether it be a care manager, care coordinator, or actually an NP or a physician.
What you're talking about really sounds like the 21st century version of, you know, Doc Williams or whatever with the little black bag making house calls or going around in his buggy. And, you know, sometimes we think that, well, in order to be in the 21st century, it really needs to be all super whiz-bang computerized and artificial intelligence. And I'm wondering, are there high-tech underpinnings to the systems that you're talking about? Just brings to mind a cartoon I saw a while back where someone's at a desk and looking at a millennial saying, no, you can't list your iPhone as your primary care physician. Right?
Yes, yes.
So we've gotten to that point in some cases, but the issue is, what's the technology layer in all of this? What's the intelligence layer in all of this? And how easy is it for Doc Williams or whoever to access that in order to provide care?
Yeah, and you know, so there's a whole need for a digital health strategy for any of our customers that decide they want to go down this path to care for patients. There's not just the technology, which I'll touch on in just a moment. There's also the change management aspect that has to come from the executive leadership of these health systems to decide that doing telehealth, doing remote patient monitoring is going to be a new standard of care, because we don't want to automate practices that aren't necessarily the most advanced or the most routine just by simply using technology to do so, right? We want to think about what is the best way of serving those patients in their home environment that gives us the right information back to the clinicians so there's no urgent kind of situation. The technology side of it is also a challenge because depending on where these folks live, they may not have access, and if they're in a rural environment, they may not have access to great Wi-Fi. They may not even have Wi-Fi. They may not have access to the technology to even know how to run an iPad, which a lot of these technologies are deployed on. And the reason why the technology is important to support these connectivity points is we can deploy programs that follow clinical protocols and workflows in app-based type solutions on these devices, and we can secure them, lock them down, so that no other competing data elements are working on that iPad or that technology device. Now, our long-term strategy is to be truly BYOD. As you mentioned, a 20-something who wants to talk to his PCP, wants to leverage their iPhone, we should be able to deploy technologies that way, and we are opening up our ecosystem to be able to do so. But to your point, there's security protocols and things we need to consider whenever you do that, because you could even get a virus on your phone, right, depending on what you download. So these are the kinds of things you have to take in mind with the technology infrastructure.
I often hear people talk about COPD. That's sort of a classic example. And it's that kind of
big program.
Right. The management that you're talking about is sort of people have been doing that in one version or another over the past almost decade, it seems like. And maybe cardiology, orthopedics have been areas where there's been a lot of data collected over the years. What's next? And how can this be propagated throughout all of the needs of patients, not just in a couple of silos where we happen to have a lot of good data?
Yeah, so we're working with our partners on some really cool innovative programs, specifically around maternal health. There are OBGYN patients out there that are dealing with hypertension. And if you think about it, a pregnant woman who is dealing with hypertension is only going to be pregnant for so long. So it is a shorter type program that you could deploy, but it's also a convenience type program that you can deploy for these patients. The last thing a pregnant woman wants to do in her 6th, 7th, 8th month of pregnancy is leave work, get out, walk around, possibly take the subway into the, you know, the doctor's office or drive to the doctor's office, miss time off of work, especially knowing they're going to miss time anyways after the baby's born. We're looking at these kinds of maternal health programs to really make the convenience factor better for these patients, not stress them out, bringing them into the facilities, but also monitoring and checking in with them routinely. So extend that service even beyond once the patient has had the baby and they're back at home. You can actually, think about this. There's so many new things a new mom and a new family has to deal with the baby. What about deploying lactation services and consultation? What about when there's postpartum kicking in and there's different possibly depression factors that are starting to affect this patient? If you've already gained the patient's trust, the mom's trust, through doing telehealth during their pregnancy, imagine how that level of trust could even be better now that the baby is at home, they're at home trying to get into their new routine, and I could simply have a phone call with my care provider and touch base with them on all those questions that I don't want to pack up the baby, pack up the car seat, pack up the stroller, just to go in and ask 3 questions because as a new mom, I don't know what the answer should be. to get that clinical advice in a remote setting is really fantastic and as an opportunity. So extend to lactation services, extend to postpartum. Think about opportunities with mental health. The last thing people dealing with depression want to do is go walk in and talk about their condition. But what if we could deploy surveys or questionnaires based on the PHQ-9 that we know they're not necessarily passing these days? Interact with them in a different way in their home environment where they could actually give honest answers. You know, I don't know about you. If somebody looks me in the eye and asks me a question, I'm more likely to answer the question truthfully than not show up at a visit and get asked those same questions. So if I know someone's going to hold me accountable, I know someone's going to care and ask about my condition, I'm much more likely to give a real honest answer. And then depending on my answer and depending on the clinician's workflow and protocols, different things could be sent out to the patient. Different things, social work could do a phone call, a dietitian could call in and find out and do some counseling, right? There's all sorts of opportunity when we kind of take ourselves out of these narrow clinical workflow parameters and really think about what is the best way to serve the patient long-term.
Terrific. That's very encouraging to hear. And it sounds, again, like we're talking about bringing some elements of good old-fashioned healthcare into the 21st century in a way that makes sense, that's accessible to people and accessible to clinicians and is customizable in a way that perhaps hasn't been possible in the past.
That's right. Yeah, if you don't mind, I'll share a story by one of our customers that they shared here at HIMSS this week. So you're welcome to download the video of NYP sharing their remote patient monitoring story and how the success they're having. So they had a problem with their EDs and the wait times in their EDs. And they realized, wow, a lot of times, rather than admitting a patient for a specialized type of illness, if we could just simply connect them to the right specialist in our network, we could actually get around having to admit them and have them stay in a long-term setting. So what they did, and they started simple, they put the telehealth devices in the ED, they used ED docs on call from home, and if a patient presented with that specialty, they would then ring that specialist on call. They would be at home using the telehealth device, doing the remote patient monitoring conversation online, and then determining if that patient really had a severe case. They would then, of course, have the physician who's present in the building, right, see them, admit them, and get them in their inpatient stay. But if they didn't, which they say 30 to 40 to 50% of the time, they just needed an adjustment in their meds or a recommendation to have a conversation or get some questions answered, they could simply turn the patient around and say, got everything that you needed? Isn't this great? The physician wasn't inconvenienced. They didn't have to work the long hours. They didn't have to compete with space in a small ED facility. But yet the physician and the patient both benefited from this type of care. So, like you said, we're kind of looking at the way we do healthcare and trying to figure out ways to turn it upside down, but it has to benefit both the clinicians, the patients, and the providers. If everybody has a benefit and a win in it, that's where we're really going to change healthcare. And that's what gets me the most excited about some of these programs.
It is exciting. Well, thank you for sharing what you're doing here and talking with us at HIMSS. Once again, this is David Harlow. Harlow on Healthcare on Healthcare Now Radio, live at HIMSS 2019. Connecting with Brian Gross at Philips. Brian is a business leader and a scientific leader in the Genomics for Infectious Disease group at Philips Healthcare. Welcome, Brian, and thank you for joining me on Healthcare Now Radio.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you here in wonderful Orlando.
Yes, nice to get a little bit of an escape from Boston in February, right?
That's what my wife tells me with the snowstorm leaving off the East Coast, but we'll see.
You folks have had some interesting announcements this week regarding a module around in-facility epidemiology that's layered on top of an existing product. I'd like to hear from you a little bit about the existing product and what it does, and then we can get into how the epidemiology pieces plugging into all of this.
Sure, no problem. So what we've built upon is our IntelliBridge Enterprise applications, which essentially is a data interfacing and data communication device that connects the Philips devices to the enterprise informatics devices. So it's a one pipe of information going in and out of the IntelliBridge Enterprise device that enables us to manage our ADT interfaces for each of our modalities, our laboratory interface requirements, as well as be able to aggregate our data and feed it into the hospital infrastructure through a common apparatus. That basically provides a mechanism for the health IT organization to provide the enterprise feed and not worry about each of the product requirements and filtering on their side. We manage that as part of our solution offering within the HIT environment. So the two major components of what IntelliSpace Epidemiology is based on is first our rich data aggregation service that's hosted within IntelliBridge Enterprise, as well as our bioinformatics stack, which we host within our HealthSuite digital platform.
Where is the line, and what are we talking about when we talk about bioinformatics as opposed to the clinical data that you're describing from within the clinical enterprise?
Great. So the clinical informatics interfaces typically include the traditional data capture for transactions of care. So the ADT interface or the laboratory interface, the discrete microbiology interface, for example, as well as capture of data that is part of the care process. So clinician charting or procedure reports or radiology reports, what have you. Those are typically the clinical data that we consume to provide the epidemiology product solution. But also the other sources could be the real-time location service or RFID RTLS systems. So for epidemiology, the key is to put patients in contact with locations, caregivers, and devices. And those are really the clinical correlates we use for the epidemiology solution. The other application that we've leveraged is our bioinformatics stack, which services currently our genomics oncology products, but we've extended that, since it's a common infrastructure requirement, to look at pathogen genomics. So these are the bugs that harm patients in hospitals that many have no antibiotics to treat them. And we use the pathogen genomics to take the fingerprint of infections within the hospital to look for and to identify where patient infection transmissions have occurred.
So here we're talking about superbugs that are antibiotic resistant, and it sounds like what you're leading up to is being able to parse the identities of these bugs and maybe find treatments without going to the end of the line antibiotics, right?
That's exactly right. The golden day of antibiotics is over. And as you've seen in the press, there are these megabugs or multi-drug resistant organisms that we don't have antibiotics to treat anymore. In the U.S. alone, there's over 100,000 patient deaths associated with healthcare-associated infections. These are those infections that you get as part of your healthcare encounter. So you go in for shoulder surgery, but you get a pathogen as part of that care process, and there isn't an antibiotic to treat it anymore. So those 100,000 patients in the U.S. cost the U.S. $35 billion in extra healthcare costs, and the number of patient death in healthcare-associated infections is more than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined annually. So it's a big problem.
Yeah, it certainly is. So the question, of course, is you're able to identify opportunities to do what exactly, and what are the provider organizations able to do that they weren't able to do before?
Great. So today, typically the infection control team is looking across all the infections in the hospital to try to figure out, based on their microbiology sensitivity profiles or where patients have been in the hospital, what might be causing these transmissions. Typically, they get involved when there are a significant number of infections that look the same. So there's a lot of false positives when you're looking at the problem from that perspective. And these are the same tools that they've had available for decades. What we've been able to do is add the precision of pathogen genomics to help them differentiate where a true infection transmission has happened from where a different pathogen is involved in two particular patient infections. And that's important for multiple reasons. One being, if you have, for example, MSRA or methicillin resistant Staph aureus in the NICU, it all looks the same. The decision to close the NICU may happen in order to terminally disinfect all surfaces and all nooks and crevices. But if you know that it's not the same MSRA, you don't need to go to that extreme, and you can deal with the patient isolation appropriately within the same unit.
So there's a lot of additional testing then, it sounds like, needs to be done in order to identify what it is we're dealing with, but then it sounds like we have alternative approaches to management that may be more cost-effective. So there's definitely a clinical advantage here, and I'm wondering if you see or your customers see a cost advantage in the long run as well.
That's a great question. So pathogen genomics is actually a fairly stable technology. Pathogen genomes are much, much smaller than the human, so it's becoming very, very effective from a cost perspective to be able to sequence these. In fact, Dr. Fallon was at HIMSS describing the cost for him to do the sequencing for all of his pathogens in his hospital at Westchester Medical Center, and he says he can do it at approximately $80 a sample, which is about the cost of the culture. So for a very little incremental cost, you can actually get the precision information and get a real-time treatment decision for what to do about the infection transmission.
What does the journey look like for an institution to implement this new module? How soon do we see an effect on the ground?
So in order to operationalize IntelliSpace epidemiology, we essentially need two data feeds. One is the ADT interface, which is the emit, discharge, and transfer interface that keeps track of where the patients are in the hospital enterprise. And the second is the discrete microbiology interface, so that we can get the bugs and the drugs that regarding susceptibilities, so that we can look for those relationships based on microbial antibiotic resistance. Those are the two that are required. If we layer on other data sources, such as the clinical findings and assessments interface that put clinicians in contact with patients, so we can determine if the nurse, for example, drained the Foley bag in patient one and then injected a medication to the central line in patient two, if both those patients established the same identical pathogen, this might be an opportunity for the infection control team to engage and see if it's a hand-washing concern or if there is perhaps some environmental decontamination necessary within that hospital area.
So it's a very important point where you're tracking not only each individual patient, but the pathways of care and the caregivers and the points of contact between caregivers and patients here, patients there, et cetera.
That's right, David. And these are the connections that, because of so many discrete contacts between patients, caregivers, devices, and locations, the infection control team really can't process that big data problem by themselves. A good example is if you had 500 infections in a hospital, the number of connections you need to investigate is over 125,000 to determine what's going on with those particular infections. And that's just such a big data problem. We provide the opportunity to take that off of the clinical cognitive load and put it into the advanced analytics where it belongs.
Well, this sounds to me like the digital pump handle. Epidemiology at the source. Thank you very much. I've been speaking with Brian Gross at Philips on the next level in epidemiology. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
This is David Harlow, Harlow on Healthcare, on Healthcare Now Radio, live at HIMSS 2019. You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at hashtag Harlow on HC. I'm David Harlow, coming to you live from HIMSS, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.